Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. On this episode, we are reviewing the new movie, The Menu, the dark comedy thriller horror thing that came out about food. That made it sound like we don't like the movie. No, this is a movie that many people do like. We will review that. We'll talk about the end of Andor. The latest Star Wars series has officially wrapped up after 12 episodes. And we're ranking our top food movies, which I'm sure we can stretch to be very creative in many different ways. Again, this episode presented by Omega Accounting Solutions. Attention, small business owners. You may be eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee through the Employee Retention Credit. Omega Accounting Solutions can help you recover payroll tax overpayments and determine if you are eligible to receive up to $26,000 per employee. All it takes is a quick, easy, and free 10-minute consultation to determine if you qualify. Omega is the small business champion with teams dedicated to maximizing tax credits. CPAs even turn to Omega for ERC guidance. Take advantage of the exclusive small business tax credit now. The 3-year sunset deadline for filing begins to close March 31st. That's not that far away. It's almost December of next year, 2023, by the way. Not that. But it was 2024. What are you like? It closes soon, March 31st, 2028. So learn if you qualify today. Call 800-309-ERC. That's 800-309-ERC. 800-309-ERC. Or is it OmegaTaxCredits.com now? Thank you to Omega for presenting this episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool. All right, welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool. Episode 63 of Season 2. We are gonna be doing thing. We're kind of adding a second episode, sort of. Just a heads up. I don't think it's happened this week. Probably the next week. We have to alert for advertising purposes. But Gooch and Kenjack do a thing called on YouTube. I'm sure a lot of people watch this know called the Long Take. Yeah. That's gonna essentially how it's gonna be in your guys' hand to do that. I'll be on, I'm sure, now and then. But that's going to be more of like the movie news type thing, drafts. That's going to become basically the second podcast episode. So not much is changing there. But this, unless there's a massive news thing, this first episode of the week will have less news. Like there's just no news today.
Literally.
So we're not, it was a slow week.
Yeah. It's all, yeah, Thanksgiving, all that. So
we can talk about Zoe Saldana's GMA interview. I was just watching that. She calls James Cameron Jimbo.
Jimbo Cameron.
She calls him Jimbo.
If you're Jimbo Cameron, that you gonna be called Jimbo if you mean Jimbo Fisher. If you're a coach. Yeah. So that is actually the one Jimbo I know in real life. Like was a basketball coach for years for his sons in high school. So that's basically gonna be the change. That's probably not gonna happen this week. Probably next week. Just a heads up on that, which works out because we just have no fucking news this week to talk about. Yeah. Without going into it very quickly, everyone's NFL teams won yesterday. That's very cool. Must note that. That's very rare and nearly impossible for these four franchises.
Wait, the Lions lost this week.
They did? Wouldn't know. I thought they won on Thanksgiving. Swear to God.
No, well, Bills beat them. Yeah.
You got Michigan out of it, so I think
I honestly didn't watch a down in the NFL. I thought the Lions won all week long, but Michigan won, so I don't think you couldn't give less of a shit.
The best sports day of my life, the best sports win of my entire life. Yes,
pretty this unbelievable.
Barring
a disaster, Michigan likely going to the college football playoff.
What's up, Gooch?
The best win of your life?
Yeah,
played in a national championship like. Less, I guess it's been a decade now, but.
Oh, no. In basketball, we've done it. We've gone there twice. That's second, 2013. Oh,
yeah. And 2019.
No, I'd say it was better. They preserved an undefeated season.
But it wasn't, dude. They didn't win. They beat the ever living fuck out of Ohio State. That was the best part. It was no doubt fucking three touchdowns. Best win ever. Best win ever.
We are not reviewing the Fablemans today. We'll be doing that next week.
We've all seen it, though, right?
Not everyone's seen it yet. But when does Glass Onion drop on Netflix?
I think this week, right?
No, it's not until like Christmas Day.
Okay, so then it'll be far out. Unless I'm missing something, we'll be reviewing the Fablemans next week. People are going to be asking me and Ken Jack to review All Quiet on the Western Front for the next year and a half, probably.
Yeah, I haven't. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah.
I got it. I got to watch it. Yeah.
We should just start split up our review into like 1 minute every podcast from now until Oscar season.
There's a lot of movies coming. Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite simply solid.
So Glass Onion, the 23rd of December.
Wow. Okay.
Also, Netflix released their box office numbers. Course.
Wait, so Glass Onion's not out till December on Netflix?
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
I mean, I guess we're going to wait till Christmas to review it then, because I just think most people are going to see it on Netflix.
Yeah.
It's hard to do that. We're going to talk Andor now in 1 second, but I also will drop any other shows we're watching. There is a Disney Plus show I did watch this past week that was really bad.
What?
Oh, Tim Allen?
Really, really, yeah, just...
You talking that Tim Allen masterpiece?
Just did you watch it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It is. It's god awful.
It is the references in the Santa Clauses to like current culture are, but it's bad. That weird mix of they're clearly trying to get people who grew up with those movies to watch it because there's stuff that just absolutely over kids' heads, but then there's like really. Like TikTok-y references and like that type of like generation. It's bizarre to say the least.
So it's for like older millennials to watch with their kids is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah.
It is.
Or Gen Xers, I guess. What might be even more frustrating is, and I know we said we wouldn't review this, and we're still not going to, but A Christmas Story Christmas was so fucking annoying because, and I don't know if any of you guys have watched it yet, it's like... It's impossible to say it's like a bad movie, which is almost more frustrating because it's still not nowhere near good, but not bad. So like you can't even make fun of it. And that's what I was almost looking forward to, is that for it to be so bad that we could shred it or like incredible and we'd be like, oh, we got egg on our face or whatever. And it's neither. So it's basically in my head, it never existed in the first place.
It's so mediocre you can't even talk about it.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a cultural void, which is just that makes me hate it even more.
Yeah.
Fuck that movie.
So sounds like the first one.
I wish I was on for that episode.
Oh,
man.
Shut up, you imbecile, you idiot!
No, I don't hate the original Christmas Story. I haven't seen it in so long, but I don't view it as like a, how do I put it? I think it's kind of mean spirited. Like that's just my issue.
It absolutely is.
Right, but to me, when I think of Christmas, that's not like my vibe. So I don't think it's a iconic movie, but Gooch, like that, God, I wish it was.
Yeah, I mean, the movie, I don't even think that's like a take, really. I think it plays up on the cynicism of Christmas, like
for sure. No, it's just the way that,
good, yeah, like
the way I relate to like Christmas stuff is I'm a sucker for the upbeat, like sentimental shit. Like there's a Twilight
episode, Home Alone, like him waving to the fucking South Bend shovel,
yeah, or like, yeah. There's a Twilight episode or Twilight Zone episode called Night of the Meek that always makes me tear up. Like I that's like my Christmas vibe. I just wish I was on because that moment. Watching that back of Gooch setting you guys up.
Yeah, it's just so contrived and it's just such nonsense.
Let me ask you something, Chris, and that's because this is something me and Gooch disagreed about last night. Did you, when you were younger, have a bowl that you would puke in?
Just in life, like if I needed to vomit?
No, like there's like a family puke bowl for you guys to puke into.
We had multiple. If you knew somebody was going to throw up on under one of our cupboards, it was
that's where I stand.
Yeah, it wasn't a single, you know, that's the puke bowl, but it was, you know, just grab the biggest one you got out of the cupboard and take it up to your
room. But I don't understand why not the small trash can that has a lining in it to protect it from any puke whatsoever.
Because it's going to smell like shit.
You throw it out. You throw out the bag.
Yeah, but you can clean the bowl.
That's cool. But what if you end up using the bowl for something else?
Yeah, use it for pop.
That's the bowl you puked in.
That's why you.
I would use a bowl like if you got sick, like, but it would be random. It wouldn't be like a designated one. Yeah, there was a tweet somebody said that they said my kids found out that my puke bowl is also like my pasta.
They call it their sick bowl, which is even nastier.
It's also like an emergency situation. It's not like, you know, you're not handing it out like the basket in church where they just drop money into. Like, it's just.
So how are you puking into this? Because the way I picture it, a round bowl, like I got a big ass bowl right here.
I gotta be honest. I don't think I ever.
I puke into this, right?
Yeah, that's one. That's
you're getting splashed right back in your face.
I don't. But to be fair, I don't
splash unless you sit there and you like let it dribble out like a baby or something like that. You're getting puke back on yourself.
I don't think I ever actually threw up in the puke bowl.
I don't know how much if I ever did. I think I did, but not that often.
Where'd you throw up? Your belly? Where did you throw up?
I would never puke bedside. Like, I think it would just be there. I almost feel like my mom would give it to me just as like just fucking take this, so because you're not.
It was an emergency thing. If you need to vomit, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't have I never would have had a lining in my bedroom trash can.
You take the plastic bag. You throw it out, the puke's gone forever. You don't have to worry about the fact that you have it, the puke in your puke bowl.
I would
either
never
pour it down your sink or you're throwing it into the garbage. Regardless, like just into the garbage. Right here, it's lined. You throw the garbage bag out. You're done. The whole saga's over.
He's got a really fancy garbage can. It looks like something that would be holding a massive order of fries.
Yeah,
I don't. I don't think I ever had lining in my bedroom trash can, though, because it's always for, like, papers and stuff.
Yeah.
I have the bathroom one, too. Like,
this is my trash can in my room.
No way home.
That would even be better.
Spider. So that's that. Christmas and Puke. Anyway, anyone watch Spirited, the Will Ferrell, Ryan Reynolds one?
Yeah.
Not yet.
Did not. How was it?
We'll talk Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas. We'll do that. It's not December yet. Just like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't really going to watch the Santa Claus one for a while, but I was back home with my family and we always watch Christmas. My sister and I, like, let's just watch it. It's just the Peyton Manning thing it's weird. Also,
wait, what?
I'm stunned. I'm absolutely going to make this mildly political here. I am shocked that the people who pissed and shit down their legs about Tim Allen not playing Buzz Lightyear in Lightyear aren't championing him on this new Disney show that he is front and center on. I cannot believe it.
They don't care. It's weird. They don't care.
I'm for. Also, there's a moment they tried to redo the Topo Gigio part. And it just doesn't work. Like, they tried to capture the magic of it. It just doesn't work. Also, three episodes in, no Bernard. Spoiler alert.
You got to keep going. That's how they keep you in. It's like the big dragon reveal in Game of Thrones.
This episode brought to you by Allbirds. Winter's here, kind of. I don't know. It's close, though. And outdoor adventuring becomes a little tougher in terms of on the old footwear. That's why Allbirds got the Mizzle collection, which just sounds like a holiday shoe. Designed for those who won't take snow for an answer. The Mizzle features built-in puddle guard technology. Oh, I know. To keep the winter wonderland where it belongs, not in your shoe, which is great if you're in big cities, because big cities, you wear nice shoes in big cities, Dunzo, goodbye. Those shoes are getting thrown away by April. With Allbirds, you'll enjoy the added comfort of treading lighter on the planet. Built-in premium materials, low environmental impact as well. It's a big thing with Allbirds. Allbirds put the carbon footprint right on the shoes. You can see the difference it makes, and they offset that footprint to zero, making their midsole shoe completely carbon neutral. Kendrick and I have been talking about Allbirds just before we even had sponsors to the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what more do you need to hear us say? They're always coming out with brand new things too. And Allbirds look like a shoe. You're like, oh, those are so nice. You can dress them up, dress them down. But like, not only that, like they're gonna stay nice too. And that's the key thing. And they're not sometimes nice shoes in the winter. They stay nice because they look like crap. They're dumpy shoes that just have. But no, Allbirds look good and they stay good too. A holiday season. Make sure either put it on your list, put it on someone else's list. Get the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. Discover your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com. Andor wrapped up. Thumbs up. Good show. I don't know what's next. I guess Mando in February? It's a ways away.
I will admit this helped bridge the gap pretty well. Considering how long we've had a week.
It did. It was a long. I mean, there's a lot of things that they're going to take away from this. You hope you're starting to see the campaign already. By the way, why did I have ABC on last night? Actually, I don't think I did. Oh no, I did. I was watching college basketball. So I had ESPN on, but they're pushing Andor pretty heavy now. Mainstream commercials. It's going to have that whole the whole cable release thing, like. They're going to try and get people to watch this, and I think it's going to be a big factor into how they do these shows. Like, but I don't think it should be. Like, they should spend more money. They should care about writing. They should care about storytelling. They should care less about just pleasing fans and doing stuff that is, like, worth watching. I'd rather them miss on this than miss on Obi-Wan. Like, that, I mean, because that was, like, egregious. But I thought it ended great. I thought the ending finale and like the build up to like all the Marvel stuff was fucking awesome. And you know, even if you wanted that little Disney, that little Star Wars slop, you got it in the post credit. Andor is A+. I think it's. Do I like it more in terms of like favorite than Mando? Maybe not. Like I think Mando's like in the end, I can't pretend I'm not a big Star Wars dweeb, and like Mando just always fulfills that, and is also a good show. But I think in terms of quality, Andor just takes the cake. Ken Jack.
Yeah, no, I think the finale episode was probably either the best or the second best behind the breakout one. Really, really solid wrap up. And like almost in the same way that we've been praising how like the arcs wrap up with like the start of a new adventure type thing. This definitely did that with like the kind of primer for the next season. Where it's like, hey, like, let me join you and I'll like either kill me or let me join you. And like that scene, I think, was really cool. A lot of great wrap ups for some of the other character arcs as well. I really like the slow procession towards the climax in the middle of the city. Really well done. The Gandor's the biggest strength is the thing we've talked about this whole time, which is just the fact that you could put the same exact plot line into any other sci-fi or regular sort of universe, and you still have an incredible show. I just hope that they're able to get everything like back for that second season. I assume they had a lot of it mapped up because they already had. There are like a couple seasons like ordered or whatever. So yeah, super pumped up for the next season of that. Maybe I'll be even more pumped for that than I am for Mando at this point, because Mando was gone for so long that I've almost like it's not like it's lost me or anything like that, but it's just like I'm used to not having new episodes of Mandalorian. It's been like 3 years. It feels like forever.
Yeah, it is kind of crazy how long it's been since we've gotten episodes of Mando. It's like nuts. Gooch.
I mean, I love this series. I mean, it's one of my probably five favorite series on the year, and it's an incredible year for television. So that speaks to how strong this was. Like looking back at that finale, and then like someone like if you compare this to the Book of Boba Fett finale, like it looked like those two series, Obi-Wan and Book of Boba Fett, like they look like an adult playing with his toys in a sandbox compared to like what this series did. Like, it's just incredible storytelling. I loved it. Also, shout out to whoever threw that rock. That was a very satisfying moment when she just got absolutely walloped by that rock.
Clunked.
Oh, poor Dedra Mira. Very horny little
moment. That guy's like an intergalactic simp, that dude. He is unbelievable. He like flew across planets just to go save her. He's like, I was here for you.
He rivals Anakin as biggest simp in Star Wars.
Yeah, I mean, at least Anakin had like the power of a Jedi or whatever. This guy's just like a little fucking administrative dweeb.
She was fearless. Crazy. She was
also,
as quick.
Like, they didn't give in to like the backroom kiss. I thought we were gonna get a Kylo and Rey for a second. I'm like, no, kiss. I was like, I don't want to see him kiss. But they gave you enough tension where you're like, oh, this guy's a little bit of a simp, a little bit of a perv, maybe. Chris, you've said like you've liked the show, said it's good. But like, what is your would you want next from Star Wars series?
Not
Mando,
what?
Obviously. I think everyone wants Mando.
Of course. No, not Mando. I'll tell you what I want out of Star Wars right now. Okay. Because I get a lot of heat for just coming on here every week and saying it's good. It's good. It's good.
Oh, wait. So, sorry. There is mild small news. Bob Iger's back at Disney. Well, we talked about that last week, right?
Yeah.
They mentioned that Star Wars, there's going to be more Star Wars movies. That did get mentioned. Like, that's going to be a thing that kicks into gear kind of soonish because it's been at a standstill. So keep that in mind.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess to the people who've had that criticism, I say you're right. If you still like Star Wars, you will really like this series. I don't. I'm done with Star Wars. I think it's a creatively bankrupt fucking franchise. It has been for about 40 fucking years. They're the Detroit Tigers. I just get my hopes up every time with every Star Wars property. This is the one that's going to be good, and they hit once every 5 years. I've just had it. Like, it Andor is fine. It's a if you like Star Wars, you'll like the show. It does nothing for me. You understand when I got hired here, outside of Robbie Fox, I was probably the biggest Star Wars fan at this company. It does nothing.
And
as Jeff sits there with like,
my friend, that's a bold take, my friend.
Look at that little dweeb with all his toys in the background.
I get it.
My friend.
You know, I could pull out my bucket of Star Wars toys that I got sitting 10 feet away from me.
Steal my lightsaber?
That's what we should turn this podcast into, just a show and tell between you and Jeff.
We could do multiple episodes about that. It's just, I don't know what to say.
If you're out on this, like creative, like, yeah, it's time to hang up the cleats.
Yeah. That's my thing is I am not calling it a bad show. Not going to call it a bad show. I no longer care about Star Wars. It has gone the way of many of the properties we've talked about. It means nothing to me anymore. I'm no longer excited for any Star Wars property. So what I want, to answer your question, Jeff, is for it to be done so it can just stop being a part of my life. I just don't like – I don't need any more Star Wars.
Never going to happen.
Of course. No, of course, Gooch. Like, yeah, I'm aware. But no, it does nothing for me. It goes through me like fucking fast food and you shit it out like diarrhea. And that's just what Star Wars is, in my opinion, at this point. It's just – it's a consumer product run by the mouse and fine.
And I think this is one of the best parts about Andor. It doesn't feel like they're trying to sell a toy. Like at any point. This is a toy. This is just a toy.
This very well could be the last time you get something like this, because if it doesn't really like gain retroactive viewership and all this stuff, like they may not do this again.
That's one thing we haven't talked about here is that the show has not done that well, like in terms of viewership. Like a lot of people,
it's not been bad, but it's not been Mando. Comparative to Mando, it's not been. I think they expected that a little bit. Like I don't think they expect this to be a big bombastic hit, given what it is. But now it kind of needs to be, but we'll see. We'll see.
Does it though? I feel like this is like they want to be able to have that show that they can hang their hat on, where it's like this is an Emmy winner, like but like I'm talking about like for screenwriting, like the Prestige Awards, not the production design stuff like that.
Makes sense. I get what you're saying, but did you guys really think this was that well written?
I gotta be honest. I think if you don't think it is, I think you're a little dead wrong on that. Your cynicism is taking over on you a little too much.
It is going to have a quality of
writing. Yeah, I think it's gonna have if you don't care for it like that. I do totally get that. I'm actually surprised more people like this than they do. Like, I'm surprised the amount of people like this because there was a moment. I think I said on the show. And I think Kenjack may agree with me too, because we watched it first. Like when we first watched it, I was like, oh, we loved it. I'm like, I don't know if a lot of people are going to love it. And then a lot of people did end up liking it. But I didn't think the writing is going to get a plethora of nods.
I think, to your point, Chris, I think even if you look relatively within the Star Wars universe, it like blows all that shit away, which is like a very low bar, to be fair. Right. Then when you go look relative to other things that will end up being in like the award show field, like titans of screenwriting like Emily in Paris, it blows shit like that away without a doubt. And like if you look at it, even the stuff that's going to be in the top tier, like it's going to be stuff like, you know, Succession and other HBO dramas and shit like that. Yeah. I would say, yeah, like Severance, stuff like that. It's going to be, I think, in that conversation as far as like incredible screenwriting. I think it's tough not to take a lot of it with a grain of salt because it is Star Wars. But again, you change some character names away from Ham to John. You change the location from Space Miami to regular Miami. And like all of a sudden, this is like a top tier espionage drama. So like that's where I think it's very different compared to a lot of other sci-fi things out in the field right now.
What if we tell you Boba Fett's going to win, going to get an Emmy nomination for writing?
Best Rancor. If they had an award for that. That was a great scene. I got to give it to him. Oh, and then the best world shot.
Best steampunk representation.
best steampunk that, biker shot.
I remember, like, I was, like, trying not to be too down on Boba Fett. And, like, it didn't bother me as much as some people did. But I remember when those bikers, like, turned the corner in their chase. I remember kind of just going,
Those bikes were so,
the slowest.
Those bikes had never been ridden ever. They were the cleanest bikes.
Yeah. And on like the dustiest planet of all time. It's like, I just remember being like, it seemed like they're going a little slow, huh?
Rodriguez was like confused too, because like those are like doo-wop Vespa bikes, and then they were just like steampunk dudes. It was just like a kind of a tonal mess in that sense. He didn't really know what to do there. But I don't know. It's still not as bad as the.
What was Wallace Shawn? No, it wasn't Wallace Shawn. Stephen Root. There was Stephen Root, I think.
Yes.
Wallace Shawn. Right.
It's still not as bad as the Obi-Wan Anakin Obi-Wan fight where there was just no music. There's just nothing happening while they're just fighting each other in like a pitch black field. I can't believe that shit still. Unbelievable.
I watched an episode of The Nanny with Wallace Shawn the other day.
Why was he on an episode of The Nanny?
Why were you watching The Nanny?
Oh, The Nanny's great.
Never mind. For a second there, no. I was confusing The Nanny with what's the show with the British nanny that would come to people's houses?
Is The Nanny British? Yeah. Is The Nanny British? Is Jeff just? Is this a British?
No, that's Fran. That's Fran Drescher. I was thinking of
Fran Drescher could not be less like she could not be less British.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue that Fran Drescher is the least British person of all
Most time. American woman of all time.
Yeah. What was the nanny show with the British lady?
No, think of it? It was called The Nanny?
I thought that was The Nanny. In like the early 2000s, The Nanny would come and fix your kids. Just
like The Nanny?
Is that it?
Super Nanny. That's what
Super Nanny. Okay.
Five seasons. Yeah,
with Joe Frost.
Dude,
need to eat name. Eat your beans. Eat your beans.
Literally, yes, that was it.
That's one of the best South Park episodes ever.
The Nanny. My mom and sister were rewatching The Nanny, and I loved The Nanny.
Great Nanny's show. Great. Very funny.
Fucking Niles. But Wallace Shawn was in
SA. He's maybe the most.
This guy named Niles, and he's not British? All right, well, actually.
No, he is.
Niles is British.
Yes. He's the butler for the main dude whose name escapes me.
Is British, actually.
He's British, too.
Mr. Sheffield is British.
Mr. Sheffield, the playwright in L.A. that lives in a massive mansion and also just can't seem to understand that Fran is constantly coming on to him. That dude's unbelievable. Fuck that guy. Love Niles, though.
But Wallace Shawn is in the episode. He's trying to buy into Mr. Sheffield's like Broadway. Like he's trying to buy like finance a play, and he is just a horny perv the whole episode. Ooh.
What movie was he in? Was Wallace Shawn in Marriage Story? Was that the movie he was in recently?
Wallace Shawn in Marriage Story?
Wallace Shawn is the voice of Rex in Toy Story, right?
Yeah,
he was in Marriage Story.
Was he in Marriage Story?
Yeah, he was
fucking way.
Yes, he definitely was.
He was.
The annoying guy that kept telling stories about, like, you know, I used to be on Broadway and shit like that to Adam Driver. Yeah, he was I love that movie a bunch, but he was really
Wallace Shawn could tiptoe into the quietest room and you would still know he was there just because of that.
Right.
Just the presence and voice.
Inconceivable.
He's also
Blair's stepdad. He was a great character in Gossip Girl.
That's our thoughts on Andor. Also, did anyone watch Wednesday?
I did. I watched the first four episodes with my mom. It's
is it good?
It's fine. It's fine. Oh, that's a bummer. Yeah. I mean, it's like Jen Ortega's cool, but like everything going on around her is just kind of boring. It looks great. I'll say that. Like the design is really cool. Very Tim Burton.
What was the last great thing he did? Tim Burton.
It might show up in my food movie draft.
I don't know.
Oh, what?
Just kidding.
Dude, if you fucking put that in there, I don't even know what I'm gonna. I don't know what I'll do.
If we're thinking of what I think you're thinking of,
his last movie that we have buttered on our website, so 69 or above, would be Frankenweenie. I guess Sweeney Todd. Yeah. People like Sweeney Todd.
I like Sweeney Todd, yeah. Trill Bowens loves Sweeney Todd.
Forget Halloween senior year of high school. No one dressed up in my school really. And this one kid came in like full ass Broadway quality makeup as Sweeney Todd in his school. I'm not gonna say his name, but he had one of the all time names. I just don't want to say his name on here.
That's basically the real life version of that Babadook meme.
His name was
like, I thought I was it's like that guy that like goes to the party that he's like, he thought it was a Halloween party, but it was just kind of a regular vibe, but he's dressed like Babadook. Like just,
I just texted you guys the name to the group, all time name. Confirm it's an all time name. What a ridiculous name that is. And he just came dressed as Sweeney Todd and he had like the razor, like the fake razors. We're like, wow. Okay.
Wait,
a guy with that name has to dress like Sweeney Todd.
Don't say his name. I'm not trying.
I'm not going to. I'm just like.
No, Gooch almost did it.
I'm gonna do it.
Big Fish. Did anyone like Big Fish?
I like Big Fish.
I like Big Fish. You know what? That movie Wide Eyes that he did, I actually thought was, from what I remember, was pretty good with Christoph Waltz and Amy Adams. That was okay. But like
the best Tim Burton movie to me is Ed Wood.
I think that's almost like universally. I feel like almost everyone says that. You know what my favorite Tim
Burton movie will always be probably the.
You know what my favorite Tim Burton movie is? My favorite Tim Burton movie is
Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Yeah,
it's one of the greatest fucking movies ever. Pee-wee fucking
first movie we ever downloaded. For some reason, it was like when we got internet. We got like. Just dial up or whatever, and like our first CD drive, which I stepped on as a kid when it was opened. That was not a good moment. I remember we downloaded Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It took like 3 days to download.
I love that movie so much, man. That movie's so goddamn funny.
Now I'm just getting flashbacks of downloading the Attack of the Clones trailer on dial-up internet. It took forever.
15 hours.
This episode of Life Camera Barstool is presented by The Ridge Wallet. Not just the Ridge Wallet, but the old I got the key thing, by the way.
I need it so bad. I need it so – look what's going on. Like, my keys just fall off. I just – like, they fall off.
What a loot. Oh, no. Nothing like the flimsy keys. Those are lame.
It's been a problem. I keep losing one. Like, it's not good.
Two Ridge things. The Ridge Wallet, slim, minimalist wallet, holds up to 12 cards, plus room for cash. That's big. Over 30 colors and styles, including carbon fiber and burnt titanium. Got RFID blocking technology, too. Protects you from digital pickpocketers. And then the key silhouette. Secures anywhere from 2 to 6 keys. Organizes your keys in a compact, small silhouette. Easy fold-outs like a Swiss Army knife. 6 colors and styles, too. It's great. Get the best offer at Ridge, RIDGE.com/LCB. And save the 40% through December 2nd. Great. Both these are great Christmas gifts. If you're looking for small Christmas gift things, this is it. This is it right here. The Ridge Wallet. Check it out today. Ridge.com/LCB. Save the 40% through December 2nd.
Welcome into the investigation, where we'll be looking at one of the most salacious and mysterious cold cases ever documented. Who is Sharon? And why did she leave Kinjak? For the first time ever, we were able to get an exclusive interview with the woman behind his heartbreak.
Okay, ma'am, please state your name and your relationship to Mr. Kennedy before we get started.
My name is Sharon, his second ex-wife.
And Miss Sharon, in your words, what event led you to leaving him?
Well, you see, it was a lot of things. The biggest thing is that he wouldn't stop forcing me to watch anime with him.
Well, I'd say it's normal for guys to have hobbies, don't you think?
Sure, sure, but this was less of a hobby and more of a life devotion.
Ma'am, I don't follow. What does that even mean?
He would constantly talk about how he needed to focus on his training.
His training? What is he training for? Who is he, Rocky?
He said he was going to become the fifth Hokage, something from Naruto. And when I tried to tell him that it wasn't possible because it was just an anime, he looked at me and he said, "Believe it."
Well, that definitely sounds unique, and it sounds like Kinjak might have some personal issues to work out. I don't know. I don't watch the anime. But would you say that's divorce-worthy?
Well, no, love. That's not all. He also bankrupted our family. With those damned bean showerheads.
Excuse me?
He took a loan out from my bastard cousin Vinny for 10 large to stock up on these showerheads filled with beans. He said they were the shower of the future. But in reality, it just made him smell like a British person left in the sun for too long.
Ma'am, I gotta be honest. I have no fucking clue what you're even talking about. But let's back it up. You have a fucking cousin named Vinny?
Unfortunately, Kinjak wasn't available for comment as he said he is looking to keep a low profile while avoiding criminal charges from the IRS. We'll continue the investigation at a later date once I look into this Naruto character. Until then, back to the show.
All right, let's talk about Wondery. Go deeper into the canals of Numenor and the mines of Khazad-dûm and more with the official Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power podcast. You heard us talk about this on the regular LCB episodes all the time. Me, Jeff, and Robbie, all fans of the show, really like a lot of what they were doing, and specifically a lot with like the production value and a lot of how they interpreted some Tolkien stuff. You can learn a lot more about it with this podcast. Host Felicia Day and several special guests provide an inside look at the groundbreaking series and what it took to bring Middle-earth to life. Each episode of the official podcast features exclusive interviews with the series showrunners J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay, including the very first full breakdown of the incredible season finale. Felicia goes behind the scenes with the cast and crew to bring you jaw-dropping stories and Easter eggs that you don't want to miss. We talked about this also on LCB Easter eggs. They take forever to find. Better to hear it from the voice themselves and also just kind of get that behind-the-scenes look, or I guess behind-the-scenes listen about how a lot of this stuff was made, which is awesome. Production value on the show was incredible, like as good as anything I've ever seen on television in my entire life. So watch The Rings of Power on Prime Video and listen to all 8 episodes of the official Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power podcast for free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app now.
No interview today. We were off last week. Did we interview someone? I just completely forgot about it.
I think we're caught up, though.
Thomas Lennon was our last one.
Yeah.
The menu. Brand new movie. It's been out for, I'd say a few weeks. It kind of was small. Now it's wide. Focuses on a young couple who visits an exclusive destination restaurant on a remote island where the acclaimed chefs prepared a lavish tasting menu along with some shocking surprises. Ralph Fiennes plays the world-class chef who sets it all up and adds some unexpected ingredients to the menu planned. The action follows one particular A-list couple that takes part. So that is The Menu, directed by Mark Mylod, who really hasn't done any massive movies whatsoever. This is really his first.
Last one he did was Ollie G, right?
Ollie G in the House?
What's Your Number with Chris Evans and Anna Faris?
No way. Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow. But he has directed many episodes of Succession, episodes of Game of Thrones, many episodes of Entourage. I wonder if he picked the songs at the end of the episodes. And that will make sense when you see who produced the movie produced by Adam McKay and Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Gary Sanchez Productions, which I thought was ending. Wasn't Gary Sanchez shutting down?
I think
this is the last one, no?
No, it's not. They have more. Yeah.
Oh, maybe it's the last one with the partnership of McKay and Farrell. Maybe the company's not dead. Maybe just their partnership.
They're falling out. A lot of people in this. Ralph Fiennes, Anya Taylor-Joy, Nicholas Holt, Hong Chau, our good buddy John Lasagna, Johnny Legs is in it, playing a great role. A lot of small bit characters, too, bit actors and characters. A lot you'd recognize from Succession. Also, one man from a show we've talked about many times on this show. This is for you, Ken Jack. I don't know the actor's name off the top of my head. I always forget it. But he played a character in a show we've talked about a long time.
Are you talking about House of Cards?
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about...
Oh, yeah, Blythe. Donald Blythe.
Donald Blythe.
Yeah, Donald, that's Blythe, right. Donald Blythe. I love seeing the guy.
That was that character's plot line. Donald Blythe's a big pussy. But he's going to be in my back pocket. Reed Burney, yeah. This movie has less favorable reviews than I actually thought it would have. It has a higher critic score. It's like 80. It's almost 90%. Yeah, 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. 70% from audiences. This was a very fun movie. It is not remotely subtle. Very straightforward.
Yes.
A complete commentary on the service industry. And the irony here being we're reviewing this movie. People who review and critique art and over-critique it and make people lose their passion and their love for things. Again, not the most subtle movie, but I think that's very much obviously on purpose.
Yeah.
Well-crafted story. I thought the way they explained things was very good as well. The acting's great. Ralph Fiennes is just fucking awesome. Like, he is... Have you ever turned in a bad performance that you can even...
Never.
Up your head?
Not once. Clash of the Titans. Not his finest moment, but that's a paycheck movie.
Do we give him a pass? I think maybe we do. Yeah. I really had a good time with this movie. Is it one of my favorites of the year? No. I would have preferred maybe like a little more subtlety to it, but I also, maybe that might be a bad take because I don't know, maybe that would have made the dark comedy not work as much. I think the beginning is a little punchier. Great food shots, like a delicious looking movie.
I had to stop on the way home. I literally ate like a medium bag of popcorn, which is pretty big for one person. And this is like, I got out of the movie at like 11:30. I had to stop on the way home and get like the like 7th Street Burger, which is one of the greasiest burgers you can get in town. Like, I was so hungry after this movie.
I think part of it was the title cards on each item of food, which was very smart. I like those shots.
There's a food we want to talk about later that like didn't look too delicious to me. And I say to this is why I don't like that movie. I really had a good time with this. I thought this was very well. It was very well made. Looked great. Ralph Fiennes is awesome. I don't think anyone else like totally stood out for me, though. Mm-hmm. I think that was part of why, this is not like top tier of the year for me. But incredibly solid, well above good, just not great, but a high recommend for me. I'll give it an 84 out of 100. I really like this movie. I really liked it. Ralph Fiennes is awesome. And I just want to remind you that I should he even nominate it for an Oscar? No. But I think you can be – no, not for this. You can be award-worthy – even if you don't win, Voldemort to this day is an all-time performance.
Yeah.
I will always stand by that. I think him as Voldemort is like an award-worthy performance.
Yeah.
But he's great. Ken Jack, what do you think about the menu?
So I'm like, I echo a decent amount of yours as far as like how you feel about the dark comedy element of it. It definitely, there was an air of pretentiousness in the movie that, it didn't totally turn me off, but like it turned me off a little bit. And it felt to me a little bit like a light version of an Ari Aster movie, maybe in part because of like the delivery of a lot of like the, we'll say like horror tension or suspense moments, but also in the ambiance, like a lot of the darkness, like with Hereditary added on to the fact that they used the same composer and it felt like he used a lot of the same musical beats as Hereditary. And that's like not a huge deal. That's not a big deal at all. I almost thought it was going to be the same composer, but it's a composer who his last movie he did was New Mutants, which was just a bizarre back-to-back movies to film is the menu and then the New Mutants. But yeah, I think the strongest parts of this movie come in, I would say specifically the three characters played by Nicholas Hoult, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Ralph Fiennes. Specifically, the dynamic of the first two, I think, is awesome throughout the entire movie. And Ralph Fiennes interacting with them is great as well. Everyone else is kind of like just there, and like they don't really contribute a lot to me. But still, I would agree that I would say it was very fun in a sense where like you're not watching this movie to like I feel like see a very heightened dramatic performance. It's more about like the commentary and like the humor element of it. Could it have been a little bit like less like, oh, we're a very smart movie? Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I think that would have made it much better.
I think you're making the point that I probably should have made more like about the subtlety, because I think the subtlety lack of it was fine, but like you're right, it's a little too unsubtle. Maybe
it just feels at certain points in the movie where they're just like, oh, we're smart and we're class conscious here. It's like, no, you're not. I know you're not Michael Mayotte or whatever. Like, I know for a fact you're not. Like, none of the people on this movie outside of like the crew are. Like, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like it feels to a degree a little bit hollow in the way they're messaging, maybe, and just that adds on to the or that's influenced by like the fact that it does feel a little pretentious. But still, like the humor I think worked really well. Like the laugh out loud moments were really good. A lot of the dramatic moments where like they shock you, they really get you, are really interesting. Again, that just the dynamic between those primary three characters, I think, was fantastic. I almost would have preferred if it was like just them. It wouldn't have made sense really, but like if it was just those three or something and some sort of exclusive experience, I might have been even more interested in it, because those three are incredibly good actors. And I think that they did a phenomenal job, specifically Anya Taylor-Joy, who I thought just crushed this movie. Solid ending. Decently well paced, I think. Like there was no point where I'm sitting there like, all right, when's this shit gonna pick up? When's it gonna pick up? Like it's pretty much like moving throughout the entire time. So I landed on like I'm like a 78 on it. I definitely got turned off at certain things again, but it's overall a pretty solid movie, and one like it's easy to recommend, I think, to a lot of people too, because like you don't need to be some sort of like I'm looking for class messages in my movie to watch it. Like, I think you'd still enjoy it if you're just going to watch something that's funny or like entertaining to a degree and not need any of that other stuff. So yeah, I'm at a 78.
I'm a little higher. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I wasn't sure who Jeff wanted to go next, but yeah, dude, have at it. Good.
I'm a little higher than you all. I'm at an 85 right off the bat. It's actually my number 12 on the year. Admittedly, I'm a sucker for movies that just swing for the fences. And this movie absolutely just swung from the back of its heels. It doesn't always hit, but when it does, I think it's really fucking good. I think it does a tremendous job. We all here, for the most part, really enjoyed Everything Everywhere All at Once. This is balancing quite a few different genres. Like it's thriller, but it's also got some horror aspects, the dark comedy. It's two different, very different styles of comedy between the dark comedy and the satire, and it balances all of those, I think, fairly well, also with just like a straight up character drama thrown in there from Ralph Fiennes character. I think it has a lot to say. That's for sure. I think that's where the negative points come in. I think it almost has too much to say at certain points. It's like, what messaging are you going with here? Between, are you making a commentary on like the relationship between an artist and his art, or are you going for the social commentary at the same time? Like, it just becomes a lot, and it's not always, like you said, very nuanced, and especially in the class stuff. But for me, it works really well. And like Jeff said, just amazing food shots. God, I was so hungry. I was so hungry during this movie. I could not stop eating. Number 12 on the year. I really like this. Also, like, a great theater experience. So if you're going to go, I would recommend going on like a Friday night, like go when the theater's packed. Like it was fun to see with the crowd, like got a lot of cool reactions. We'll talk about in spoilers, but like the first real dramatic moment, got a big reaction from the crowd.
You know, it's funny, cause we did that draft of movies that college kids would love. I feel like it would be one. Where it's like, you got to see this movie, The Menu, man. It's crazy. Like, there's so many twists in it. And this movie's pretty awesome.
It'd be this. It's so fucked.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Yep. That would be the adjective.
Bro. Anya Taylor-Joy, bro. I want to get sliced open by
Smoke her Show.
I want to get sliced open by her shoulder blades.
Smoke Show of the Week, Anya Taylor-Joy.
I mean this as a compliment, a huge compliment. I don't think there's any human being in the world that looks like her. Like she is a unique looking woman. Gorgeous.
She's like Argentinian and British, I think. Very unique. Yeah.
I saw an interview with her where she was like, she was made fun of for so long that she was like, she had like a fear of looking into mirrors. And it's like, dude, girl, like you do not have to worry about that. All right. Let somebody like me worry about that. I really like this movie a lot. It is, it has potential to make my top 10 list at the end of the year. It's an 82 out of 100 for me. There are certain things right off the bat that I love. I hate chef and food culture. Like I hate the whole yes chef, no chef shit that goes on. Like in, I think that shit is so
the brigade kitchen.
I think that's causing so the ass. Yeah. As if they're in the military and just the way that it skewers food culture,
Chris, real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
My dad was a chef for like my first like 15 years of life. Now he doesn't work in the kitchen anymore, like more manage stuff. But he actually went to culinary school through the military.
Did he real? Oh, jeez.
Swear to God. No, it's funny. He hates the shit. He hates that shit too. No,
it's not to say that chefs are bad. It's just that whole culture of, you know,
oh, no, this he agrees. Yeah,
like it's the you know, like it's a battalion is ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and the way that this thing just makes fun of the Instagram life of like, I'm just going to take pictures of my food. Like, you know, shove a scallop up your ass, you know, make me a batch of chicken tenders and call it a day. But that's side point. I love the way it's directed. This is very random. I really like the title cards of all the dishes and what they did with that. I thought that was really funny and amusing. I'm glad, Jeff, that you referred to it as a dark comedy, because I wasn't sure throughout a lot of the movie, because the movie was making me laugh, like just with how insane it was. And I couldn't tell if it was – there's almost like an American Psycho-esque element to it where I'm like, was this supposed to be something that was on the nose with its comedy? But what carries this truly, and we've all talked about it, is – a powerhouse performance by Ralph Fiennes. You know, Jeff, you and I were texting about it last night about how he's great in everything. And I love Harry Potter. I think we all love the Harry Potter movies. He is more terrifying in this to me than he ever was as Voldemort. Like, and he's great in those movies. But I think this is it's the one disagreement we're going to have. I think this is an Oscar caliber performance. This is one of my five favorite performances of the year. I think he carries this entire thing. I think he is unpredictable. He's terrifying. But just as an actor, there's with every role he plays, there's like a discipline to his performance. Like he's never unhinged as an actor. You always feel like he has a semblance of where he wants to go with every one of his roles. And in this, carries it the whole way. I think that it's a movie that's going to pick up some steam. I think it's going to have some legs and do better at the box office. And maybe it already has than some people think. It's an 82 out of 100 for me. I really did enjoy it, though. Like, I just appreciate it for being a movie that is unpredictable. I'm really done with predictability when it comes to so many films, especially genre films. And this, a lot of twists and turns. Shit, sorry. And a tremendous antagonist played by Ralph Fiennes here. So really good stuff. I enjoyed this quite a bit.
He not only works perfectly as the antagonist, but he works perfectly for the comedy elements as the straight man. Like he's balanced. Like it, like a lot of those jokes don't land without him like just straight facing it like perfectly. Like he was fantastic.
Yeah. I guess if there's one complaint, because I am praising it, I really like Nicholas Holt as an actor. I thought that character was just okay. You know, I thought Jeff, you alluded to it a little bit. A lot of the supporting characters are just kind of maybe a little bit bland. But my biggest complaint is that the movie – there's not a whole lot that I dislike, but the movie was ever rarely great for me. I know that sounds kind of weird, but there's never a moment where I'm like, this is Oscar winning, like film of the year, great, but it's always really good and it's rarely ever bad. So yeah, a solid recommendation for me. I really did enjoy this. Yeah.
I love the Nicholas Holt character, but I think only because that represents a certain type of person that I feel like I've seen a lot, who's like they watch whatever great British baking show, and they're like, yeah, actually, that's, you got to let the bread rise like that. I just,
you know,
that's what you got to do like that. And I think that that was a perfect counter to the Anya Taylor-Joy character of just like, I just want to eat good food and I don't care about this artistic expression and I don't care that there's saffron in this or whatever that you're tasting on your super refined palate. And I think that worked, at least for me, in especially with the dynamic between those two.
Later on
with Ray Fiennes.
In fairness, I did really like his arc. I liked the conclusion to his character. I thought that, like, again, that's one of those twists in the movie where it's like, oh shit, this is going to be fun.
Yeah.
Did anybody else kind of feel bad for him at the beginning? Because, like, he is obnoxious in, like, his, like, passion for this. But, like, you're like, Anya Taylor-Joy is kind of, like, shitting on, like, his, like, what he likes. Like, just, like,
everything.
He's kind of nerding out on
that's what I
like, you know.
I think that's when we thought he was his girlfriend and not a prostitute. That's like when we thought it was his girlfriend. Yeah, it's like, wow, you're a mean girlfriend. But it's like, oh, no, she's hired to be there. Yeah, I'd probably be shitting on it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really solid. I do think, like, I'm going back and forth, like, how much more I wish I could have had from, like, the supporting cast. I mean, I think obviously Anya Taylor-Joy character is kind of the only one that you truly need, like, a larger developed, like, arc there. But, like, I don't know. Maybe, like, clearly it was intentional that, like, these guests are basically fucking NPCs. Like, that's just what they are. Like, they're kind of there just for, like, the fodder of the movie.
Are we into spoiler points yet? Yeah. When he's like explaining why everyone is there, he's like, oh, you guys like cheated on like, what is it, like taxes or something? Like, you're doing insider trading. I can't remember exactly what it was. This guy's cheating on his wife. This person like has run like a million businesses into the ground, like through her reviews. And then he just looks at John Lasagna and he's like, you ruined my Sunday because you weren't a shitty.
That was very funny. That was very funny. I hated it.
It was cool because I do like that it plays into like that washed up, don't give a shit artist type thing too.
I really did like that the movie also acknowledged that Ralph Fiennes' his character is a fucking lunatic and like he's not in the right here. You know what I mean? Like one thing I hate about the Saw movies is that they constantly are like, Jigsaw, he's actually the protagonist. Like, you know, these people, they had a choice. Like, you're fucking putting people in torture chambers. Like, what are you talking about?
I didn't actually lay hands on any of these people and kill them. It's like, well, yeah, you did.
Yes, you did. You're a mass murderer. You should be in prison.
Definitely did.
This movie constantly acknowledges that this dude is a lunatic. And because of that, you end up with a more enjoyable experience because there's a self-awareness to this that I really did enjoy. Yeah.
That Coast Guard guy coming in and being like, oh, I loved you in that movie. And it was the movie that he hated.
Man, was that also – was that not a great twist too with the candle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
– I had a little bit of a feeling. Like, you know what I mean? Like when he came in, I'm like, this is so meticulously planned out every second of this. Like, I don't know. Yeah. That guy was good though. He played that well. I was still on my toes for it.
Fast foodies too.
Yes, big win.
Yeah.
It's a big, big, big win for fast food fans. No, very, very solid – enjoyable movie. This is definitely worth a watch. Completely different, unique. Kind of goes for it with its style, with its genre. It was good shit. Good shit. I think even if you don't love it like on the highest end, you're still gonna enjoy the menu.
Yep.
So shout out to the menu. Kind of a smattering of scores, but in like the low to mid 80s range. So like a high recommend for the menu. Next week, The Fablemans.
Yep.
Very curious how high everyone has The Fablemans.
Oh, yeah, Sammy Fableman. You hear me? I
imagine pretty high on the list. Definitely go see The Fablemans that we were reviewing.
Jeff was smoking.
He's trying to tell us how we're going to review.
Next week, we're reviewing The Fablemans.
No, we're reviewing
The Wildback.
I was smoking on that Boost Mobile. That's our next fucking ad read here. Boost Mobile. Sponsoring many things in our lives recently. We're related to the Dozen Trivia competition at Barstool. Also, shout out, if you're listening to this. No, Cyber Monday's over. Boost Mobile, one line, $25 per month, unlimited data, talk, and text, period. Gotta have unlimited talk. Who doesn't have unlimited talk anymore? Some people don't use the phone anymore. People only text, but you got to have unlimited talk.
Stephen Hawking.
One line, $25 per month, unlimited data, talk, and text with Boost Mobile. Gives you everything you could want in a wireless carrier. Pay for nearly everything up front and get exactly what you pay for, too. It's bigger, it's better, it's Boost Mobile. Unleash your power with Boost. Sign up for Boost Mobile today. Switch and save. You get all the stuff you need in your phone, but for cheaper prices. Don't pay a premium for the most – I mean, data, talk, and text the same across all the – text is the same no matter where you pay it from. You're paying for text and talk and data. Shout out to Boost Mobile, sponsor of this show, sponsor of the Dozen Tribute Competition, all that, and more. Ranking food-related movies. I'm going to say off top, the menu probably falls on my list given rating. However, I don't want to put it on my list today. We just talked about it.
Okay.
So I'm gonna
How can you not? That's rude. Ray Fiennes served and Anya Taylor-Joy ate. Come on.
I want to talk about my five more. And my five is a fucking banger. As the synopsis says, a fable of emotional liberation and chocolate. That's Chocolat.
I just rewatched that the other day.
Chocolat.
Much more long-winded than I remembered it being.
Yeah, Julia Binoche, Alfred Molina, Johnny Depp. It is very – I watched it very recently as well. Also a great running gag in the movie I Love You, Man. But yeah. Chocolat
yes,
is –
I forgot about that.
Just yeah. – it is. It is a very long-winded – it does. True. But if you – it's chocolate. It's Chocolat. That's my number five food-related movie. Ken Jack.
My number five is going to be Big Night. Big Night, starring the boy himself, Monk, and the Tucci man, Stanley Tucci. Pretty solid movie. I think someone at the office recommended I watch this, and I had never seen it before. I forget who it was. It might have even been Rico Bosco. I don't know. But I really liked it a lot. Really solid movie about brothers in the restaurant. I would highly recommend it. A little bit off the beaten path. I think it was like late 90s movie or something like that. Very fun time. Very, very fun time. Interesting ass movie. High recommend. I know it's not gonna be as popular as some of the other picks on here, but I would say check it out.
No, I saw it on a ton of people's lists when I was like putting my list. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but it was on a lot of people's lists when I was like trying to think of like food movies.
Large recommended it. That's why, yeah. And he's a food guy, so you gotta trust him on that sort of thing.
Castellani.
I base my picks around how they're going to look on the graphic. And number five, if you don't want to count it, I can pick another one. But I'm going with a movie that I actually think is close to perfect, but it has very little to do with food. It's Shame with Michael Fassbender. Because that motherfucker.
You're talking about because of his big hog?
It's because that motherfucker had a knife and fork and he was eating ass that entire movie. That's my number five. If you don't want me to count it, I can go with another one.
Michael Fassbender gets an auto pass no matter what on the show.
I say yes because of the combination of eating ass and the fact that he shows off his massive hog.
Yeah, I wish.
And his big fat meat.
That's not my joke. I think it was Spill.com that made that joke about him with the knife and fork. But first of all, amazing movie. Like I think one of the best movies I've ever seen and one of the best performances I've ever seen. But I just want people to look at the graphic and be like, what the fuck does Shame have to do with food? Very little, but if you watch the movie, I don't think any character has ever been better at doing anything in any movie than Michael Fassbender was at having sex in that movie. That dude, he was just everywhere. I'd love to do like a retro review of that film because I think it's incredible. But Shame with Michael Fassbender, one of my favorite performances of all time. That dude was he was Stu Feiner in that movie. He invented the 15-15-15.
Speaking of retro reviews, by the way, someone asked me if we'd reviewed the 1991 movie Fried Green Tomatoes.
On the bottom. That made me laugh so hard.
And if so, what episode number?
the addition of if so, what episode number made me laugh out loud.
We went back and forth on Twitter about it, Gooch, where it's like, you understand that movie predates podcasts by about 15 years and our podcast by like 25.
It predates like most of us.
I was negative 4 years old when that movie came out.
I was negative one. I love
that shit because I'll get like tweets from people being like, did you ever do a post game video when Maglio Ordóñez hit that home run to send the Tigers to the World Series? I'm like, well, first of all, that was 5 years before Twitter and I was 11. So no, like that. Oh, that was so great. We should. That would be a great April Fool's joke, man. If we did a whole episode reviewing fried green tomatoes.
Anyways, my number five is actually this movie. It is The Menu. I got to include it. I really enjoyed it. Like, I think I enjoyed it the most out of all of us. Just very good. Speaking of a knife and fork and eating ass, I'd like.
Oh shit, dude.
I might cut that.
Bonk.
But yeah, no, this movie was great. Also, we didn't talk about her during the review, but I do want to give a shout out to Hong Chow, who I thought was great as the hostess.
She really was cool. Really good. Yeah, she was excellent. Yeah.
She was very good in Watchmen, by the way.
Oh yeah, she was the billionaire. I forgot about that. She was terrifying.
She was a psychopath.
When she shows up with that baby, she pulls the baby out.
Yeah. And she like, no, oh, that fucking show ruled. God damn.
You know what? Watchmen is the only book I read every year, and I still haven't seen the TV show, and I need to.
The show fucking, oh.
I was so scared. I was so scared they were going to fuck it up.
To this day, is probably the most goosebump moment I've ever had watching a TV show. I won't say what moment if you haven't seen it, but there's a moment towards a later episode. I know, Kendrick, you probably know what I'm talking about. That you're just like, I remember we chimed in on our group. You, me, and Troy were like, "Oh fuck, dude!" Mm-hmm. That show is fucking.
I should watch it then. Yeah, that was Damian Lindelof, right?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah,
yeah. My number four. It's not Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off. Did not make my list, by the way. Shout out to the Disney Channel original movie classic.
The movie we have reviewed on the pod.
We did a watch-along.
Watch-along. That's what it was. Yeah.
That's a Bobby Flay banger. If you're looking for a Bobby Flay movie, he is in the movie. Sausage Party.
Yeah.
I loved Sausage Party. Sausage Party was very funny to me.
It was funny.
Oh, Gooch, you don't like that crude humor, Gooch?
That's like a extended episode of Big Mouth. I don't want to watch that shit.
I love I thought Sausage Party completely just said fuck it. They didn't try to do anything like to like, oh, let's hold back a bit. They went for it. I thought it was really fucking funny. I thought some of the over the top meta stuff was really good too, especially towards the end. I really enjoyed Sausage Party. That's my number four.
That's one of those movies I'm amazed was not NC-17. The movie
there's ends, no like blood or anything, so I guess.
Yeah, but the movie ends with a giant orgy between.
There's other bottle of fluids. I mean, it's food porn. It's literal food porn.
Literally.
Yeah. A great voice performance by Edward Norton in that movie. Completely unrecognizable as the. What was he? A fucking piece of pita bread or something?
I think so.
Yeah. Funny movie, man.
There was definitely a piece of pita bread.
Yeah.
I don't remember who voiced him.
Yep.
I like Nick Kroll, but
he was
that just the douche grades on. Oh, I didn't like it.
All right, I'm up. Right.
Yeah.
Let's do Ratatouille. Let's do Ratatouille. Ratatouille, great cooking movie. Makes fun of the French, which I always appreciate. It's got a rat.
Remy.
What more do you want in a movie? Got Remy the rat smelling cheese and making delicious French food. I mean, there's literally nothing more any human being could ask in a movie or of any kind. And also, I would say that Ratatouille and their treatment of critics, it does The Menu before The Menu. I would say that The Menu borrowed a lot from Ratatouille, and maybe they owe them a piece of their gratitude. So I'm going to go with our good rat friend, Remy the Rat.
You're saying they owe them a piece of their gratitude?
Oh, you fucking literally, show. Yeah. Fuck.
Also, this is my number four as well. So I'll go ahead and kind of piggyback right off that. It has you said a lot of what I wanted to say. I will say it does have a really cool like backstory. Like, pretty sure they scrapped all the characters and all the storyboarding, the script, like they scrapped it like 2 years before the movie was supposed to come out. Brad Bird had to come in and basically redesign everything, like oversee the animation. Like, it was a really quick development for, like, in terms of Pixar, like that's light speed. Like, Pixar usually takes about 10 years. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah. The amount of times in this fucking podcast in which you guys do that. What's that?
He thought that I was making a joke about Lightyear. Was
Lightyear.
That?
I thought you were trying to make a Lightyear joke there.
Nope.
The amount of times on this podcast in which you guys say funny shit that I so desperately wish I was smart enough to say or would think of it's every week.
You're talking about Ratatouille, right? That's the thing. That's the goalpost. It was Ratatouille.
It was funny. It's fucking funny.
Humor.
Yeah. My number four is a movie that got way better for me after I worked in the service industry, and it's Waiting. I like Waiting. Funny movie.
Talk about a crude movie.
When was the last time you watched it, Chris?
It's been a minute.
You need to go back
and rewatch that movie.
We just rewatched it like a year ago, maybe a little more than that.
And way worse.
Have you ever seen Still Waiting? The sequel?
No, but I'm aware of it, but I never saw that.
That'll disappoint you.
Straight to
it's DVD. A movie that like you definitely look back on. And I think we were all in the same boat. Like, oh, great movie, very funny, like underrated classic. And you go back and rewatch it, and you're like, I don't know. This doesn't really hold up.
It might. You know what's weird is that I never found it hilarious, but I related to it as somebody who worked as a waiter for a year. Just in terms of like cunty customers, weird, eccentric, like people in the kitchen. It's a great cast. I love Ryan Reynolds. I love Justin Long in it. And it does have one of the best rants in movie history by that young guy at the very end of the movie when he just shit talks everyone that he worked with. So that's my number four, but I am kind of terrified now to go back and watch it.
Go back and rewatch it. There's just like some things you just forget about and you're just like, this really doesn't work.
Are we talking in the sense of like shit that just would not fly today?
Ryan Reynolds is supposed to be like the charming character, even though he is a piece of shit. And like he's hitting on a 16-year-old for the entire runtime. Like he's trying to fuck this like 16-year-old hostess.
You know what? I'll be real. I completely forgot about that. Okay. Yeah. Shit. All right.
Wild movie. Gooch.
I did Ratatouille. So you're back
my
up.
My three is Ratatouille. Amazing movie. Amazing animation. Sounds great, looks great, just one of those technical feat movies from Pixar. It's like, damn. Ken Jack 3.
I'm going to go with Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, chocolate's food, it still counts. And I think that movie, obviously, we always talk about Gene Wilder.
Wait.
We got
chocolate no longer food?
No, are we talking about 2005?
What do you mean?
Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory, not fucking.
I thought maybe you liked the squirrels. I don't know.
Imagine we assumed you meant the Gene Wilder one, but then you're next and you're like, and next up, Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
Fucking deep Roy. This guy crushed, man. He was so good. obviously, we always talk about Gene Wilder being incredible, but another movie that the menu definitely borrowed from, letting all the rich kids get what they deserve. Very class conscious movie, as many would say. And again, the menu maybe stole a lot from it. But yeah, great movie. Get to see a fat kid drown in chocolate. I mean, that's just funny shit. I'm sorry. I'm going to laugh at that 100. Violet Beauregard getting rolled out of the building. I'm going to laugh at that 100 out of 100 times.
It is. And, it's a sadistic movie. It really is.
Very sadistic, but that's what makes it so good. For sure. And yeah. I'll be damned if that chocolate didn't look damn tasty, regardless of all the children dying in it. Old Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory.
Wait, speaking of Violet Beauregard, you got to hear this clip from Mia Goth. Let me see. Go ahead and keep talking, but I got to show you this. She sounds just like Violet Beauregard, like her actual talking voice. It's so funny.
Her actual voice is so weird. Yeah. It's shocking.
Well, no, I'll run with that because we have the same number three, Ken Jack. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, a classic film. I think, and I believe you guys have maybe tweeted this out, Gene Wilder in that movie, I think that is one of the best lead performances to me, like in any movie. Honestly, because I think that, especially after seeing what Depp did with the role with the remake, the idea of anyone else ever playing the role of Willy Wonka is a foreign concept. He's just mm-hmm. – he has to do so many different things. He is so charming. He is a little bit sadistic, actually a lot sadistic, a bit tragic, scary. He is a million different things in one, and he handles them all perfectly. That's and that movie looks just – it looks incredible for its age. It's aged really well.
You want to be shocked, Chris? The Johnny Depp one is extremely highly rated.
You know, when it came out,
go to Rotten Tomatoes. It's incredible.
When it came out, people did like it, like in the initial reaction to it. And I don't think it's a terrible movie, honestly. Like visually, it's Tim Burton, so it looks excellent. And he got a Golden Globe nomination for it. It was one of those things where five, 10 years later, people were like, "This shit kind of sucks." Like it was. Yeah, I people turned on it fast.
The kid from that is now – he's the good doctor, right, or something?
Yeah, Freddie Highmore. He's
Freddie Highmore, yeah. That's right.
He's one. He was a – I'm not going to say unappreciated because he was in a ton of stuff. He was a fucking great child actor. Like even
– Very good child actor.
Yeah, even in that movie, which I'm not crazy about, like he was excellent. And he's grown up in the Bates Motel and now good doctor, and he's been in a lot of stuff – But yeah, also, who's the grandpa in that movie? Is it Grandpa Jim, Grandpa Joe?
Oh, Christopher Lee's in the movie. I forget.
Christopher Lee's the dad.
Well, I'm talking
to Willy Wonka's dad.
The character in the original, Grandpa Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a piece of shit that guy was.
Yeah, he's
guys fucking guys bedridden for months. Kid gets a golden ticket. And he's getting up and dancing on his fucking floor. Yep. What a lazy bitch.
Chris, three.
That was my three.
Oh, okay.
Wait.
Gooch, three.
I gotta show you guys this.
Okay.
This is what she sounds like. Hold on.
If I wasn't an actor, I think I would own a bakery and I would call it Mamma Mia's. And I would have blueberry pancakes. It would be a blueberry theme.
She sounds more like Veruca Salt, though.
Oh my God. This is such an absurd.
Yeah. Violet Beauregard was American, right? Veruca Salt was Beauregard the American. Person.
Okay, that's
fine. Yeah.
I got the
blueberry. It threw me off. It incepted me. Yes, that's from like a clip. Yeah, it's from like a month ago.
Gooch,
dude, she sounds like a child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that's disturbing.
A little bit.
Creepy. She's a scream queen for a reason, man.
My number three is Chef, which I'm positive will show up on list coming up, but it's number three for me. Probably one of the most – I think it's going to be the most appetizing movie. I think it's easily the most appetizing looking movie. I mean – the meats that they cook, that Cuban is the most satisfying thing. One of the best binging with Babish videos. If you watch him on YouTube, him cooking that Cuban too. Oh, so good. Just incredibly endearing too. Like it's one of those movies you watch and you feel better immediately. Like
great cast too, man. Like everyone in it is super famous. It's
Robert Downey Jr. is in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. For half a second. Yeah. And you got Dustin Hoffman. Yeah.
Michael Pena.
Bit of a vanity project for John Favreau, where it doesn't he have to choose between Sofia Vergara and Scarlett Johansson? In that movie?
Yeah. Which one?
And he wrote the movie,
kind of Volley is sous chef, I think, in that movie.
John Leguizamo.
Yeah, John Lasagna. Yep.
Two
for me is Chef. Like Gooch said, it's the most delicious movie ever made. Unbelievable. It is the number one movie for me that I don't think you can show someone that movie and they're going to say they don't like it. It's the easy movie to show somebody and say, at least on the surface, they enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's just good. Ken Jack, too.
Yeah. For me, I'm going to do Pig. Pig starring Nick Cage.
Good pick. Wow. Didn't think.
And it's a movie all about a chef. It's freaky as shit. It was one of my favorite movies of, I think it was last year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was last year, not 2 years ago. Awesome movie, one of the all-time great Nick Page performances. Really interesting world that they built, and some great food scenes. And I would note that the scene where
he gets served by one of his former assistants or whatever. And like the speech he gives him and like the way that that guy acts it against Nicolas Cage is one of the great scenes of the last few years. Great dialogue scenes of the last few years and just incredible acting. That's with the pig man.
That's a great pick. Pathetic that Nick Cage wasn't nominated for an Oscar for that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that may be, and I know he's won an Oscar. I think that's the best performance of his career. He is
so good.
Freaking fantastic in that, dude. Okay. The juxtaposition between your number two and my number two is hilarious because Pig is a soulful drama starring an actor, you know, making a tremendous comeback role. My number two is Good Burger.
No, great pick.
Yeah. Good Burger is, I'm sorry, man. It is funny. Like it's not even in an ironic way. I find the movie really funny. It also has one of my favorite, one of the stupidest lines ever in a movie where by Dan Snyder, who's since been canceled for being a pervert, where Good Burger's about to close. And he says, well, I can always just feed my mom cat food. I find that shit to be so goddamn funny every time I watch it. It's so stupid.
Very funny movie.
It's funny to me. And it has bizarrely, in some weird ways, aged well because of Kenan Thompson's star continuing to rise. And he's been like the longest tenured SNL cast member ever. It's hilarious Siskel and Ebert reviewed too. So yeah, Good Burger is my number two.
That's a great pick.
Gooch.
I'm retroactively mad I forgot about Pig as it was my top movie of last year. So I feel like an idiot.
Fucked up.
But I'm not going to insert it on my list. I'm going to stick with what I wrote down last night. My number two is Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. I think it's one of the funniest movies.
That eating scene, man. The scene where they eat the burgers, nothing makes me hungrier. God damn.
Like the whole time, the way they hype up the White Castle burger throughout that movie. It's like just makes you so fucking hungry. Like you get like a peripheral high off of them. Like you can actually you feel yourself getting the munchies through that movie. And it's all time funny. Like it really holds up well. Like it's still very funny. Like all the different like bits and running gags like between Neil Patrick Harris, the twins at Princeton playing battle shits. Like all that shit is so funny. Like. It's hilarious. Also, Anthony Anderson is stealing the show for like 5 minutes with that drive-through.
Okay, we're gonna turn this motherfucker down.
So funny. So good. But shout out to Pig. Shout out to Pig. Pig is great. If you haven't seen it, I think you can still stream it on Hulu. It's been on Hulu for a while, but definitely worth watching. Yeah. Harold and Kumar, though, my number two.
My number one is Willy Wonka. Ken Jack already said it. It's the best performance I've ever seen in a movie. Gene Wilder's Willy Wonka.
Wow.
It's just so good. It's an unbelievable performance in an unbelievable movie, and he fucking rules. Just so good. It's charisma. Like it is the definition of charisma in a performance.
Is there any modern performance like in recent history that you can think of that compares to that? Where it's like no one else could have played this role.
I feel like that's such a loaded.
Jason Momoa and Aquaman probably is up there for me.
You know what?
To imagine anyone else.
But this is going to sound. I'm not comparing it. Just in terms of like, no one else could have done this. Is Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, or like Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark? Where it's like
Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man in Iron Man is it's not Gene Wilder as Willy Wonka.
No,
but it is a performance that is like culturally defining though. I think there's something to that. I mean, he was always mad he wasn't nominated for that. He was nominated for Kurt Lazarus as well from Tropic Thunder.
Yeah, he should have. I went off, but he should have been nominated for Endgame as like a lifetime, you know, achievement thing. But that's sad. I'm with you. Iconic performance, great movie, great pick.
Yep. Ken Jack won.
I'm going to go with Chef for a lot of the reasons you guys were talking about. Very, very endearing movie. One that, like you were saying, you could just watch with literally anybody and they'll enjoy it. And I think we talk a lot about, I feel like over the course of LCB, like just movie food, like the Cypher with the steak and the Matrix and all that. That panini, man, or that panini, that sandwich, man. It's ignorance is bliss. But that Cuban sandwich, man, I don't think anything's ever made me want a singular food item more than that scene. And man, it's just good. Good ass movie. And another one, man, you definitely stole from it. Menu is just a stealing movie. Class consciousness, hating critics. Hello, ever seen Chef? No, I'm just fucking around. I really do like Chef a lot.
Good pick.
Also, when they go to New Orleans and get the they go to Cafe du Monde. What's the little
The beignets?
Yeah, they get the beignets. Those beignets look perfect. Oh,
so good.
You know what? That's a movie I need to rewatch because I remember liking it, but not loving it. I feel like I would like it. I haven't seen it. I don't know, 8 years.
I got it on Blu-ray. If you want me to mail it to you,
you don't need to, but I appreciate it. My number one is another movie starring a guy that has, I believe, since been canceled. But I always found it fascinating, and a reflection of. I think it's aged well as a reflection of kind of modern American society. Super Size Me. Is my top pick.
Jeff's favorite.
Oh, no.
Jeff's favorite, number one.
No. Do you hate Super Size Me? Why? Why?
Well, this is a cheat. You're cheating a little bit here because now you've opened a can of worms on a documentary because we all would have just had Jiro Dreams of Sushi in here. Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's a food
you
movie.
I feel like you opened a can of worms, but I fucked that movie. It's fuck him. He's a piece of fuck him.
Well, why, though? I want to talk. Why?
Selfie side can't. It's just so fucking
self canceled.
What a douchebag.
I'm not saying he
also,
isn't.
Also, the only man that didn't he self cancel himself?
Self canceled. There were no accusations against him.
That's I guess okay. The one thing that's bullshit about that movie that he never acknowledged is that the guy was a fucking vegan. And so in the scene where he's vomiting up McDonald's, like, of course you're going to. Like, you don't eat fucking meat. But I really did – we talk about it with actors all the time, like sacrificing, gaining weight, losing weight for the sake of art. Dude did legitimately eat McDonald's every day for a month. Like, it's kind of fucking wild. I always viewed it as a very fascinating movie. I really enjoy Super Size Me. It's funny to me that you hate it.
It is. I mean, I don't think it's a bad documentary.
Yeah. I will say as a counterpoint, I think if you just ate like Bubba's Burgers and frozen chicken nuggets every day for the same amount of period, you probably still gain a lot of weight.
Of course. That is one. That's another thing too, is that he chose McDonald's. I think the Super Size Me, like, or the Super Size idea was enticing, but it was also, look, it was influential. I mean, they put it in the end title crawl or the, you know, that final snippet at the end where like the supersize moniker ceased to exist after that. Like,
did you ever watch, Chris, and I'm curious if you've liked this, if you have seen this, the movie where he chases down Osama bin Laden?
Where in the world is Osama bin Laden? I watched parts of it, and I was like, there's nothing to this, because he's not going to catch Osama bin Laden.
I'm in Afghanistan. Maybe I'll find him. It's like, no, you won't.
It's one of the most meaningless documentaries of all time. It's like me doing a documentary about trying to find Atlantis. Like, it's – what are you doing?
Exactly.
And that was his big follow up after Super Size Me, right? Like, he didn't.
What was the one, Jeff? We almost reviewed one, right? The chicken one? Holy Chicken. Yeah, that's right.
Was that his?
Yeah.
Was like the most recent one he did, I think.
And then he randomly did the One Direction concert movie.
Really? My number one is Willy Wonka. There's not much else to say about it, but Chris, you do know Super Size Me is like full of shit, right? Like, that's
they fudged a bunch of numbers. I'm aware. Yeah.
Like, he didn't log any of his food.
All that movie does is make me want McDonald's.
It's like a, if it came out today, it would just be a YouTube video. It'd be like a YouTube challenge. Like, oh, I ate McDonald's for every meal for a month.
Oh, avocado guy. Or whatever.
Also, like, what was he trying to prove, that like eating fast food was bad
fast
for you?
Fast food is unhealthy. Supersize, no shit.
Like, he got rid of the supersize, which everyone loved.
Who did that?
You guys are on the verge of making me dislike this movie now.
Burbeck, the two YouTubers, Eddie Burbeck, Ted, they went to every Rainforest Cafe in the country.
That's impressive.
Yeah, it's actually they're both are very different but very fast, because one of the guys really likes Rainforest Cafe, the other one like just went along as the friend and was like, this is the most miserable experience of my life.
Nikato avocado.
Dude, I don't know what that guy is. All I know is that he's fat. That's the only thing I know about him is that he was skinny and got fat.
He was a super skinny vegan who now legitimately, because there's a YouTube channel called Moist Critical that talks about this guy all the time. He just decided he was going to have about 8 pizzas a day, and now he looks like Brendan Fraser in The Whale. And
dude, he looks like 450 pounds.
He looks like the guy in Seven who got kicked in the stomach and exploded. Yeah. Like, he's just disgusting, and doesn't care. He's just like, now, like, he's just like,
I'm making money.
Yeah, I guess somebody should do a documentary about him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm sure if you're listening still, you're hungry now. That's how I am. That's it. Next week, The Fabelmans.
Yeah.
It's going to be the Judd Hirsch episode.
You'd all be dead if it wasn't for my David.
My David. I love that one.
That's it for Ken Jack, for Gooch, for Chris. I'm Jeff Dilo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode releases 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.